a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
We'll call House Transportation to order. Want to greet the people that are on the internet and remind everybody we're going worldwide at this moment, and welcome all of our sparse number of guests that we have here today. Another reminder, please turn off your cell phones, and if you can, refrain from texting and reading your emails and all that kind of good stuff at this point. We have some pages here. I'd like to have you step up and introduce yourselves and tell us where you're from, please.
My name is Anna Cronin, and I am from Gettysburg.
Welcome.
Michael Steyer from Oneida.
Welcome to you, too, Michael. And we'll have the secretary call the roll.
Representatives, Elliott, Ironcloud.
Here.
Sigsted.
Here.
Street.
Here.
Rosam. Steele.
Here.
Van Gerpen.
Here.
Hubble.
Here.
Hansen. Hickey.
Here.
Liss.
Here.
Nordstrup. And Verschiel.
Here.
We do have a quorum.
Yeah, I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Moved by Representative Street, seconded by Representative Steele. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Minutes have been approved. I'd like to remind anybody who's going to testify to go ahead and make sure you're signed in, and we'll get that list up here. Doesn't look like we're going to run into much of a problem this morning, though. If you have any handouts, the pages will be happy to get those out for you. Just hand them to them, and they'll get them out to the committee. Just a quick reminder that please address all questions to me or through me, through the chair. We're going to change the calendar a little bit because we have someone who has to testify in another committee. So we'll move SB 28 to the top of the calendar. Then the rest will stay in order. So are there any proponents for Senate Bill 28, revise certain provisions regarding the authority of the Secretary of Transportation and create limited speed zones through highway work areas and to declare an emergency?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Bill Nevin with the Department of Transportation.
There you go. I want to thank you again for your consideration in allowing me to go out of the normal batting order. I really appreciate that. Thank you. If I might, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to give you a background of this statute and why we arrived at the point we have today. The legislature first gave the Department of Transportation, through its secretary, the authority to adopt a limited speed zone through highway construction areas when necessary for the safety of persons and property back in 1981. At that time, House Bill 1077, which would become SDCL 3225-19.1, was enacted. That bill provided that the Department of Transportation Secretary, after consulting with the Secretary of the Department of Public Safety, the Director of the Highway Patrol, and the Director of the Division of Highways, after those individuals consulted and deemed it necessary to do so for the protection of life or property, the limited speed zone could be established. The beginning and end of that limited speed zone was required to be posted with signage for that limited speed zone to be legally maintained. In addition, the location and duration of the posting had to be on file with the Secretary of State, or excuse me, the Secretary of DOT. So they had to put on file when the limited speed zone was going to be in effect, whether it was going to be simply while during the day and work was being done, or at night, or 24/7, depending on how the nature of the work dictated the safety requirements. Then in 1984, as a result of Executive Order 84.1, the Department of Public Safety was abolished and its functions were transferred to the Department of Commerce and Regulation. That then caused a legislative change in the statute to change that reference to the Secretary of DPS to the Secretary of Department of Commerce and Regulation. And incidentally, in 2004, as a result of another executive order, the Department of Public Safety was recreated and the function transferred back from Department of Commerce and Regulation. Then in 1995 session, two different bills amending 3225.19.1 were passed. The first was House Bill 1046. That bill changed the language of the statute, which read areas of construction or reconstruction to highway work areas, in order to clarify that maintenance and repair projects were covered as well. In that bill, the reference to the division or the director of the Division of Highways was also deleted, since that position no longer existed, and it made some form and style changes. The second bill to come out of that 1995 session that amended 3225.19.1 is the reason why we brought Senate Bill 28 to you folks today. It's this bill which has created problems in maintaining safety in our highway work areas. This bill inserted into the language the immediate work area as the location where the limited speed zones signs were to be posted. So instead of saying the beginning and end of the limited speed zone is to be posted, the statute would now read the beginning and end of the immediate work area of the limited speed zone for the posting requirement. This second bill in 1995 also added a new sentence into the statute, which has created the difficulty that caused us to bring this bill for today. That added sentence was, such signs shall be posted only during the hours when work is actually being performed. An additional change made in that second bill was to provide for a doubling of the speed penalty into a highway work area if those signs advising of that doubled speeds or doubled penalty were also posted. The intent clearly seems to have been to promote additional protection for highway workers by enhancing the penalty for speeding in the hopes of deterring violations while the workers were present. With those changes in 95, the statute reads as it does today. It authorizes the establishment of a limited speed zone in a highway work area by the posting of signage. However, because those signs can only be posted during the hours that work is actually being performed, the limited speed zone can only be legally maintained and thus enforceable during those hours when work is actually being performed. That meant that even though the highway work project might take several days or even weeks to complete, the lower speed limit through that highway work area could not legally be maintained at night, weekends, holidays, or any time work was actually not being performed. Might include bad weather days for the contractor. The problem is, depending on the nature of the work, the disruption to the driving surface or driving conditions due to the work project don't automatically disappear at the end of the workday and arise when the workers come back the following morning. Rather, from a practical standpoint, the disruption to normal traffic conditions may remain constant until the road work, or at least that stage of the road work, is completed. I'm not sure if the problem that we see created by this restrictive language was voiced when this second bill was considered back in 1995. It preceded my coming to DOT by a month. I came to DOT about 1 month after the 95 session ended, so I'm not sure of the history of that legislation in that year. The problem was first brought to my attention by a contractor and some field personnel on a highway interstate reconstruction job in western South Dakota between Rapid and Sturgis. We were reconstructing the westbound lanes, and as a result, and this is very typical as you all know, we routed the westbound traffic then head-to-head onto the eastbound lanes separated by cones. The Secretary of DOT properly established a limited speed zone for that head-to-head traffic and posted it, although we didn't post for the double fine. Then in late summer 2008, there was an accident in that work area, a car running into the back of one in front of it. I don't know whether speeding was involved, but it did trigger the contractor, the prime contractor, to call me and ask whether or not we could put up those double fine signs in hoping of slowing traffic down even more. That prompted me to review the statutes and our field practices, and I discovered that the two didn't mesh, and this problem became apparent. The statute only allows a reduced speed zone in a highway work area when work is actually being performed. For that situation where we needed to maintain traffic around the clock, head-to-head, on one side of the interstate for the several weeks it might take to complete the reconstruction of those westbound lanes, we did not have any legal authority to reduce the speed limit below 75 miles an hour at night, on weekends, anytime work wasn't being performed. Yet no one can question the need to reduce speeds below 75 miles an hour when you've got head-to-head traffic going separated only by some plastic cones. 75 miles an hour is obviously a dangerous situation. This need to route head-to-head traffic through or around a highway work area, as you all know, is a common construction requirement, often based on the nature of the work being performed. Particularly in South Dakota, where we have short construction seasons, it can facilitate a quicker progression of the work if we can take traffic completely off a section of road rather than trying to do one lane at a time while maintaining traffic through that area. So while on these interstate reconstruction projects, we had been creating limited speed zones and posting reduced speed for those head-to-head traffic situations since 1995, we actually had no legal authority to do that. To address that situation, the department brought House Bill 1023 in the 2009 session. That bill would become SDCL 3225.7.2. And this new statute essentially created an exception to the general rule of 3225.19.1 that only allowed reduced speeds when work was actually being performed. The exception was for the situation where, for safety reasons, the nature of the work being done necessitated maintaining head-to-head traffic through or around the construction area around the clock until the road could be reopened. Over the course of this past year or so, now my DOT field folks have come to me and brought to my attention the fact that there are various other scenarios out there not involving head-to-head traffic where safety mandates that reduced speed be maintained around the clock until the normal traffic can be resumed. And I'll give you a couple of examples. One example that I'm sure all of you are familiar with is interstate bridge work, where either the structure or one lane going over that bridge is being constructed, and so a Jersey barrier, these big concrete barriers, are put dividing those two lanes so that traffic is routed onto that one lane up over the bridge, separated from the work being going on in the other lane by these Jersey barriers. Under existing law, 3225.19.1 does not allow a reduced speed for that one-lane traffic crossing that bridge at night, weekends, or on holidays. 3225.7.2 doesn't allow a reduced speed across that bridge because there isn't head-to-head traffic. Yet for practical reasons, those Jersey barriers cannot be removed at the end of each workday and then brought back and put in place the next day. Besides, the work is still being performed on the closed off lane or the construction, so we have to keep traffic off that side until the work is completed. It might be several days, it might be a couple of weeks. Yet again, no one can seriously dispute that traffic should be going lower than 75 miles an hour across a one-lane bridge between those concrete barriers and the side of the bridge. However, we do not legally have the authority to reduce that speed unless workers are actually there and working. To cover that gap would require yet another exception to 3225.19.1 or an amendment to that statute, as this bill proposes to do. Another scenario was presented by a highway project on a section of divided Highway 50 a year or two ago. Due to an unexpected delay in completing the installation of shoulders, The contractor had to leave a several-inch drop-off from the edge of the driving lane until the shoulders could be built. Both lanes of traffic were left open, and we put signs up warning of the shoulder drop-off, as well as cones along the edge of that outside lane to keep traffic slightly away from it. But while safety really would have mandated lowering that speed limit during the time that condition existed, we have no legal authority to do that. In that case, no work was actually being performed, and there was no head-to-head traffic, not even a lane closure. So we simply had no authority to reduce the speed of traffic going through that section. If we had just coned off the driving lane, we would still need to reduce the speed on the single lane, and again, no authority to do so. To cover that gap would require yet another exception to 3225.19.1 or the amendment of this of that statute as this bill proposes to do. There are no doubt many other scenarios where the nature of the work being done and the time frame it takes to do that work make necessary for safety reasons a reduced speed limit through that highway work area around the clock until it can be reopened to normal traffic. The purpose of this bill is to eliminate the need to fashion a string of exceptions to 3225.19.1's general rule of no reduced speed except when work is actually being performed. Section 1 of this bill would essentially restore the statute to how it was originally enacted by repealing the sentence which allowed the limited speed zone signs to be posted only when work is actually being performed. That's all it does. The required consultation with the Department of Public Safety and Highway Patrol remains the same. The posting requirements remain the same. Filing with the Secretary of DOT the duration of that limited speed zone, how long it's going to be in place, remains the same. If those three officials, after consulting each other, deemed it necessary for the safety of people or property due to the nature of the work being performed, a limited speed zone could be established and maintained as was necessary, either while the workers were there or around the clock if the circumstances warranted that. At the same time, the bill would leave intact the change made in 1995 to provide for doubling the fine if a speeding violation occurs while workers are present. I believe that preserves the protection sought to be added for highway workers with that legislation back in 1995, and that's very important legislation, frankly. Finally, I've proposed that we use language while workers are present rather than while work is actually being performed, which is the language in the current statute. I believe this provides clarification while fulfilling the intent of the 95 legislature to protect highway workers. In virtually every other context of DOT's practices, work on a project is actually being performed from the time the contractor or maintenance crew commences work until that work is accepted by the department. For example, while poured concrete is curing, we consider work as being performed, although there might be few or perhaps no workers directly on site. As a former criminal prosecutor, I can tell you that proving as an element of the offense that it occurred while workers were present would be a lot easier and less subject to interpretation than proving the offense occurred while work was actually being performed. In the former case, I've got to have a worker say, "I'm there," and a law enforcement officer say he was speeding. In the latter case, I still have that law enforcement officer say he was speeding, but now I've got to get to the contractor and find out who the supervisors are and what was actually being done, where, at what time, in relation to the site and location of this offense. So frankly, it clarifies. I think it provides clear notice to the driver as well as to under what circumstances the application of that enhanced penalty would be triggered. Section 2 of the bill would repeal that statute that I mentioned we got the exception for head-to-head traffic back in 2009, as that section would no longer be present or would no longer be necessary with the amendment of 3225.19.1 as being proposed. And finally, Mr. Chairman, Section 3 of this bill declares this measure to be an emergency, declares it to be an emergency measure. For the obvious safety reasons, we would like this measure to be in effect as soon as possible for the start of our 2011 construction season this spring. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Nevin. Are there any further proponents for SB 19? Oops, I'm sorry, 28.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Randy Hartley. I'm with the Department of Public Safety, and I'm the Assistant Superintendent of the South Dakota Highway Patrol. Later last year, I was contacted by Mr. Nevin, and he asked me about the bill. We discussed the bill. And to me, it just made good common sense. The purpose of Senate Bill 28 is to leave reduced speed zones in place where hazardous driving conditions are present. Whenever you have a construction zone area, there is a need to reduce the speed zone based on the work that's being done. Because of the nature of the work, because of the reduction of the lane, because of how traffic is being diverted, it has a lot more to do with the road work that's created than it does with this, you know, the driving or the double penalty. So to me, it made perfect sense. The hazards that are created in head-to-head traffic, as Mr. Nevin said, is a good example. There's no less hazard in head-to-head traffic when it's dark. In fact, it's probably worse. There's no less traffic in head-to-head traffic or less hazard in head-to-head traffic if you've got people that are on the right-hand closed lane of the interstate that are working. It's the head-to-head traffic that creates the problem. And right now, the way the statute is we end up with a situation is created where you can have that reduced speed zone only when those people are standing on the closed portion of the interstate. The hazard still exists. It also creates a confusing situation when you have two different speed zones. So you would have one speed zone when workers are present. You'd have another speed zone when the workers are not present, and it creates a confusing situation. That's not desirable for law enforcement under any circumstance, where you would have two different speed zones for the same area and then require the public to decide, okay, what's the speed zone going to be now? Do I have to look around to see if there's workers present? Is it going to change the next time I come through? It simply states that if the speed zone is posted, which is required to be posted, that would be the speed limit. So that's the speed that they would travel through. And as Mr. Nevin testified, that would be consistent now under this bill because you wouldn't be required to change it back and forth. The low light conditions that are created at night, when essentially the speed limit would be allowed to go back to 75, in my opinion, actually creates a worse situation than it would be if you left the speed limit all the time. And Mr. Nevin used the example of the narrowed bridges. I think all of us have probably been in a situation where we're driving at night and you come up to that bridge work and it almost looks like for a brief period of time you're trying to, you know, stick a thread through a needle because it looks very, very small. And it's worse at night. You know, the faster you're going, the more it comes up. You know, it actually creates a greater situation or a greater danger to me, in my opinion, at night. So it would simply clarify the speed zone. The double penalties would not change. The double penalty would have to be, the workers would have to be physically present in that area in order to write a double penalty. Otherwise, the speed limit would be enforced the same as it would be in any other road. There would be no double penalty except just when people are present. For that, I would ask that you support Senate Bill 28, vote to pass, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hartley. It's not very often you get a round of applause on your testimony. That's pretty good.
Kind of shout that was for me.
Oh, okay. Are there any further proponents? Are there any opponents to Senate Bill 28? Okay, seeing none, we'll move right along to committee questions. Any questions for the proponents from the committee? Seeing none, we'll move into discussion and or action. Representative Liss.
I'm a former interstate truck driver, might be again someday, and Let me tell you about some of the nightmare, or at least one of the nightmare scenarios I've encountered in other states with different laws on this subject. Going through states like New Mexico, I think Arizona is a big offender in this area. You'll have a construction zone which is many miles long, 20, 30, 40 miles long. The construction zone will be signed at 45 miles an hour, no construction workers in sight, oftentimes no law enforcement in sight. And so what happens is you get some stickler for the law, like me, starting to head a train which grows and grows and grows and grows as the speeders come up behind me, and you know, it ends up being maybe hundreds of cars long, just a nightmare scenario. The tailgating, the agitation that people feel, and we're with this bill, we're increasing the authority to post these zones, and I guess I'm throwing myself on your mercy to continue to do a very good job of showing the kind of judgment that avoids nightmare scenarios like I described. Thank you.
Any further comment? Representative Hubbell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, Mr. Hirkley, maybe this question is for you. You post minimum, is it on? Okay, just discussion, I'm sorry. One of the questions that are unanswered for me that I would maybe want a discussion here is that there's minimum speed limits posted, but is there maximum speed limits posted? Like your example that somebody got rear-ended, obviously they're probably going a lot slower than somebody who is coming up on them. I'm wondering, in our highways, we have maximum speed limits. Do we have a maximum speed limit that they must have if they're going to travel that road, if they're on the where there's cones?
Well, I believe it.
I'm just wondering because I see the same situation.
My own experience
there.
Is that that speed limit is the maximum.
I think 45 miles an hour is the maximum for the interstate, and that's a lot of times.
No, that's the minimum.
Okay, minimum. I'm sorry.
I was confused then on what you were trying to ask.
I did confuse you. I'm sorry about that. Is there a minimum that might be posted so you don't get some sort of a train, like, or maybe is there places where a slow person can get off once in a while and sit, so you don't have 20 miles of?
I hate to cut you off, but I think that might be irrelevant to what we're talking about here. So
okay,
thank you. Any other comments? Yes, sir. Representative Nordstrom.
Move to pass on House Bill 28.
Nordstrom moved, and who's Representative Hickey seconded. Okay, we'll move on to any discussion on the motion. Seeing none, we'll have the secretary call the roll. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed show the same sign.
Representatives Elliott, Ironcloud.
Aye.
Sigistead.
Aye.
Street.
Aye.
Rosam.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Van Gerpen.
Aye.
Hubbell.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hickey.
Aye.
Liss.
Aye.
Nostrup.
Aye.
Bercio.
Aye.
12 yeas, 1 excuse.
Okay, so SB 28 goes to due pass to the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
I would move consent.
Second, no.
Oh, yeah, I can't. I don't know if anybody heard that aside, but it was consent in the Senate, so I can't be here. The Senate doesn't follow the rules.
I didn't say that.
He'll deny that because now the whole state knows he made that comment. So. It's a little levity. That's good. The reason we can't do consent, folks, is because of the emergency clause. Okay, we'll move on to Senate Bill 19, update certain provisions pertaining to motor carrier safety and the transportation of hazardous materials. Are there any proponents for Senate Bill 19?
Good morning again, Mr. Chairman. My name is Randy Hartley. I'm with Public Safety and Highway Patrol. I am here in support of Senate Bill 19. It is an agency bill. Senate Bill 19 is the annual update to the Federal Motor Carrier Safety and Hazardous Material Regulations. The two segments, in addition to state statute, comprise the majority of the Federal Rule of Motor Carrier Services uses to maintain safety and compliance of commercial motor carriers. The rules are amended occasionally at the federal level and can be subjective to a change monthly. Adopting the changes, at least on an annual basis, keeps South Dakota current with the rest of the nation. To engage in interstate commerce, commercial motor carriers must pass a vehicle safety inspection. Motor Carrier Services with the South Dakota Highway Patrol conducts more than 28,000 commercial vehicle safety inspections annually. The regulations in those inspections must be in compliance with every other state in which the carrier intends to travel, so essentially our inspections have to be the same as everyone else's. To offset the cost of performing inspections, South Dakota receives grant funding through the Motor Carrier Safety Assistance Program, or MCSAP. To be eligible for MCSAP funding, South Dakota Highway Patrol Motor Carrier Services is required to file a commercial vehicle safety plan every year, and one caveat of that plan and receiving the funding is the state adopts current federal regulations. So Senate Bill 19 would meet the requirements and bring South Dakota into compliance for 2011. The content of Senate Bill 19 primarily updates existing Title 49 of the Code of Federal Regulations from 2010 to 2011. But there is one change that I feel should be addressed with the committee because it's been a topic of discussion during this session. Text messaging by drivers of a qualifying commercial motor vehicle is currently banned under 49 CFR 390.17, and it has been since June of 2000. That section of code prevents the operator of a commercial motor vehicle from using any equipment or accessories that distract the driver from the operation of the vehicle. In June of 2010, Federal Motor Carrier issued an interpretation of 390.17 that specifically addressed the ban on text messaging in a commercial motor vehicle. Part 392.80 of this year's update directly spells out the prohibition against text messaging, and it defines what text messaging is. The texting ban only applies to commercial motor vehicles engaged in interstate commerce or to qualifying vehicles carrying hazardous materials. It does not and would not apply to commercial vehicle operating only within the state or to a farm vehicle, regardless of the size of the truck. The definition of text messaging under 392.80 is manually entering alphanumeric text into or reading text from an electronic device. It does not prohibit reading, selecting, or entering a phone number for the purpose of initiating or receiving a phone call. It also does not apply to use of global positioning or navigation systems. Just to clarify, Section 392.80 really doesn't change anything. Text messaging is already banned under Federal Motor Carrier Rules on 390.17. It just simply defines text messaging as being banned, and it clarifies what text messaging is. So it in the end, it doesn't really change anything. I would encourage you to vote do pass on Senate Bill 19, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hartley. Are there any other proponents for Senate Bill 19?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Myron Rao, President and Registered Lobbyist for the South Dakota Trucking Association. We rise in support of this every year. It's an annual adoption. And we had a discussion with the Highway Patrol this year because of the text messaging issue, and they were concerned we may resist it. And honestly, we have to comply in the rest of the 48 states. And so we have to comply here, too. I mean, it doesn't – when you're driving to Wyoming or Colorado – you can't text, so we don't like the checkerboard system. We just soon have everything uniform across the nation. So, again, we arise in support this year like we do it every year and encourage your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rao. And may I comment on your sartorial splendor today? You look very nice. Are there any other proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Donna Lightsky, South Dakota Petroleum and Propane Marketers Association, and we also rise in support of this. I think I told you a couple weeks ago that everything we haul is hazardous materials, and so we feel this is very important to always keep up to date on the latest rules and regulations So we hope you pass this bill. Thank you.
Any other proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents? Senate Bill 19. Seeing none, we'll move on to questions from the committee. Seeing none, we'll move on to comment and or action. Representative Nordstrom.
Move due pass on Senate Bill 19.
Second.
Senate Bill 19, due pass by Senator Hawaii promoted you. Representative Nordstrom, seconded by Representative Hansen. The Secretary will call the roll. Those in favor will say aye, and those opposed will say nay.
Elliott. Ironclad.
Aye.
Sigistad.
Aye.
Street.
Aye.
Rosem.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Van Gerpen.
Aye.
Hubble.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hickey.
Aye.
Liss.
Aye.
Nordstrom.
Aye.
Verschio.
Aye.
12 yeas and 1 excused.
Senate Bill 19 will be passed to the floor. The due pass motion. Representative Hansen.
Move consent if I might, please.
Thank you. You certainly may. Moved by Representative Hansen, seconded by Representative Nordstrom. To move to the consent calendar. All those in favor, this is an oral vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Thank you. Consent calendars are very nice. Shortens our day down there. Now we'll move on to Senate Bill 24, revise certain provisions regarding the exemption from the motor fuel tax for bulk fuel transfers into a terminal. Are there any proponents for Senate Bill 42?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's Senate Bill 42, just to clarify for the audience which bill we're talking about. Senate Bill 42 has been brought to you by the department in cleanup of some language within our fuel tax area. It's on very rare circumstances that fuel is pulled from one terminal and maybe transferred to another terminal. And one of the things that happened in this past year is we got that question from somebody about, if I pull fuel from the terminal but it's destined for another terminal, do I have to pay the tax on it? And the law was not clear, crystal clear to us in that area. So basically all this does is cleans up that language and makes it very clear that when fuel is pulled from a terminal at the rack, that the tax applies at that point in time. And we don't tax it twice, so it's not like we're going to get the fuel tax two times when it's pulled from put into the other terminal. But it is taxed at the time that it is pulled. And it does happen in rare circumstances. But we did not want to create a loophole in our law that would allow fuel to be pulled, not taxed, and the driver indicate that it was being taken to another terminal when in fact it was not. So this basically just cleans up that language for us. And I would appreciate your favorable support and be happy to answer any questions at the appropriate time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Elmer. Are there any further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Donna Lightsky, the South Dakota Petroleum and Propane Marketers Association, and we do rise in support of this. As Deb just stated, this is a very, very rare situation. In fact, I have not ever seen this happen in 16 years. But knowing that it's unclear to somebody, we want to make it crystal clear that you cannot remove from the terminal rack. And just because you guys maybe have not heard that term before, what it means when you go to a terminal rack, it's just the loading platform that you drive your transport under. You hook up a hose to the top, fuel goes into that transport, and then you take it to your gas station. So that is a point of taxation, is right when that goes into that truck. It's not when we dump into our gas station. That is a point of taxation, and that is a point where tax is always collected. And I will stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lightsky. Any other proponents? Are there any opponents to Senate Bill 42? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to committee questions. Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Seeing none. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Steele.
It's for the lady who didn't identify herself. That's Elmer. I just couldn't resist that, sorry. How do they keep track if it goes from tank to tank, or you already charge tax on it, if it only happens once every 16 or 18, how do they keep track of how are we not double taxing when it comes out of that tank?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I will indicate who I am. Deborah Hilmer, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. After I stood up, I realized I did that, so I apologize to the committee. When it's pulled from the terminal, it's usually transported, if in rare circumstances, maybe transferred to another terminal. So it's pulled in, let's say, Mitchell, and they're going to take it down because they're low on that particular type of fuel in Sioux Falls. So they may rarely transport that fuel down there. They're going to pull it from that terminal or probably deliver it to someplace in a taxable manner within a very short period of time. They're not going to let it sit there and not be taxed. The bill of lading actually indicates that the tax has been charged on it. So we would know at that point in time that the tax had been assessed at that terminal in Mitchell. So we do have a mechanism by which to for them to identify that the tax has been assessed.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hillman, so this, what this does is they actually take it out of one tank and they put it into an identical tank in Sioux Falls. I mean, it's the same, because you're saying it's putting it into someplace else. They actually put it right back. Just for my own clarification, I'm just curious, really. It goes from tank to tank. That's simple.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Helmer. It's certainly very important for you to identify yourself since you're such a new employee. Okay, let's move on to committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sigstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to pass.
Do pass by Representative Sigstead, seconded by Representative Steele for Senate Bill 42. Any comments on the motion?
No comments, just clean up. I understand it.
Thank you. We'll have the secretary call the roll. All those in favor of do pass will say aye. Those opposed will say nay.
Representatives Elliott, Ironcloud.
Aye.
Sigstead.
Aye.
Street.
Aye.
Rosam.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Van Gerpen.
Aye.
Hubble.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hickey.
Aye.
Liss.
Aye.
Nordstrom.
Aye.
And Percio.
Aye.
12 yeas and one absent.
SB 42 will be moved to the floor with a due pass motion. Representative Street moves consent. Is there a second? Second by Representative Sigstead. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Great, another one for the consent calendar. I noticed a lot of people in blue shirts came in after we got started here, and I assume, is that all Watertown, or is there other? Oh, see, I knew I'd screw that up because you both wore blue shirts down here today, Watertown and Sioux Falls. Well, would somebody like to stand up and give us any comment at all? You're just here to observe everything, or are you?
There's a number of us here, Mr. Chairman, who are with the Sioux Falls Leadership Sioux Falls program.
Oh, great. Well, very good. Thank you. Hope you're enjoying it. And then we have a group over here on the left that looks like they might all be together. Are you? And good. Yeah. Oh, well, my goodness. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
You had to look this way in order to get the information, but you didn't.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Representative Hubble and Bragg.
I will be reintroducing them on the floor also.
Okay,
actually, this is my sister-in-law. She brought her children up with her, and my mother and...
you can tell us their names.
I will. I'm getting there. She, He is, yeah. And she is, my mother has been recognized a lot of times where she goes. She knows a lot of people because she was a longtime professor of English at USD. So she knows a lot of students, you know, that past students. And it's my sister-in-law, Peggy Scone, her children, and my mother, Professor Caroline Scone from USD.
Thank you very much. Good-looking family. You should be proud. Anybody else that would like to introduce any group or... Okay. Very good. Then I would entertain. Moved by Representative Nordstrom to adjourn and seconded by Representative Hansen. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned. Brandy, could I see you before you go?